Welcome to Plain Talk. Plain Talk has over 120 podcasts containing information about aviation technologies and pilot experiences for general and business aviation, from home to cockpit to boardroom to personal tech. Plain Talk provides information for pilots, industry insiders, and aviation enthusiasts alike. My name is Phil Lightstone. I'm a general aviation pilot with over 2,200 hours in my logbook, flying almost every week with over 30 years' experience in the technology, telecommunications, and aviation industries. Okay, we're here in scenic downtown Richmond Hill, Ontario, Canada, welcoming two really cool cats into the Plain Talk cockpit. I'd like to welcome a really old friend of mine, Mark Satin, and a new friend, Frank Van Burden, into the Plain Talk cockpit. Some really cool guys that are deep into the radio control model airplane world. Fellas, welcome to the Plain Talk podcast.
Thank you for having us, Phil.
Thank you.
Quite interesting. A lot of new developments in the radio control model airplane environment. And first and foremost, now, from a Canadian perspective, you folks are considered aviators from the CAR's perspective, Transport Canada's perspective, as part of our pass. But, you know, Mark, I understand that you kind of got into the hobby in 2019, into flying some very cool model airplanes. What got you into it?
Well, actually, it was you, Phil. When I came over for a drink and some friendly chat, you showed me a few of the models that you had flown in the past and had built, and at that point got me hooked. You introduced me to another friend of yours who was a member of the club that I'm now a member of. I went up to visit the field and just absolutely fell in love with the hobby and have been insane ever since.
and the field being the Toronto Electric Model Aviation Club, also known as TMAC.
Correct. And I got so into it that I'm now the treasurer of the club.
Welcome aboard. They saw a new recruit, I think, AKA Fresh Meat.
Yeah, they saw me coming from a mile away.
Our mutual friend said, "Hey, Mark, would you like to take over my godless, thankless task as treasurer?" And
that's exactly the way it happened.
And Frank, you've been flying a little longer than Mark. I seem to recall you mentioning that you've been in it for a bajillion years, starting with building model airplanes in grade three.
So I've been in there over 60 years. It left me for about a dozen years entering the work world, but I've been doing it ever since I was in grade school, and got back into it in about 1987 or 88, and there's no end to it now.
And I seem to recall you mentioned that you started with control line model airplanes, which I also started with. Of course, I couldn't really afford a Webra 09 diesel engine. I had a Cox Baby B 049, winding up to what is it, 22,000 RPM. And I should mention, I do still have the scars from that razor sharp little prop hitting me. But what was the transition like from control line to RC, which I believe you started RC in grade six?
Yes, it was a natural progression because I wanted to do it, but went about it wrong with the wrong airplane, the wrong equipment, and thinking I could do it. So,
do it being teaching yourself?
Yeah, it looked easy. Left is left and right is right, and no, it's not. So then I kind of dropped the idea of airplanes, kept flying control line, but I switched to RC boats.
What was your first RC aircraft radio?
The radio was a OS Pixie single channel.
No kidding. Wow. Amazing.
Cessna Skylane, Half A Skylane by Carl Goldberg.
Goldberg built just fabulous kits. I have a Carl Goldberg Super Chipmunk kit just waiting for grandkids to come along and help me finish that bad boy off. So you've been in the RC environment for a very long time. You must have seen a lot of change.
Yes, on two fronts. One is you no longer have to build all the stuff yourself. So you can buy stuff and it's very, very reliable. The human element is the problem in RC equipment. And the other thing is that we can make anything fly now, which we couldn't way back then.
We really are using automation, autopilot technology, and copious amounts of power to make model airplanes do things that, for the most part, real airplanes can't do.
And to go back, modelers were always, I think, dreamers, and we were always trying to emulate full-size airplanes. If we wanted to do anything, it was to fly a Spitfire or a Hurricane.
My favorite was a P-51. I really wanted to be in the seat of a P-51.
I have four of them. And
you have four P-51s?
You can't have enough of them. But
so four real P-51s? No. What do you do for a living?
No. Yeah, model airplanes tried to emulate full-size airplanes. Love to have flaps, then retracts, and then. But what happened is when the power switched over to electrics, we can now get so much power out of electrics that we can prop hang, we can go back and forth vertically, and actually in a surprise move at one of the fairs in the States, on a downline on an indoor electric airplane, the plane actually stopped in midair, rotated around, and then went back up backwards to the ceiling and then continued forward flight.
Crazy.
I will never say never, but it'll be a while before full-size aircraft can do that.
I think I sent Mark you a video with some folks that took some electric RC airplanes, built a aircraft carrier.
Yeah.
Floated it in a river and were landing their model airplanes on this aircraft carrier.
It's amazing. And I think that's one of the things that I love about this hobby is the incredible creativity that so many of the people in this hobby exhibit and are willing to share with other fellow modelers. I think that's just a wonderful characteristic of the people in our community.
So, Frank, you must have spent a lot of time with nitro fuel and diesel fuel and gassers. As you said, you've done this migration to electric. Are you ever going to go back to the fuel stuff?
Never say never, but I have one airplane left, and that's only because I wanted to have one.
What airplane is it?
It's a Tucano, half a Tucano with a very snarly 074 racing engine in it.
Wow.
So
and it's nitro?
Nitro. And it's pretty quick, but I haven't flown it in 10 years.
And just for the audience's view, how much fuel does it hold?
This only needs about an ounce for a 5-6 minute flight. So it's a small airplane. But and ever since I switched over to electrics, we can get so much power now into electrics that when we convert now from internal combustion to electric, we actually, the models become tail heavy. So we have to build differently and move stuff different places to get the CG in the right position.
So that's one of the challenges with electric power plant model airplanes. Any other challenges?
Learning about battery technology and managing home fires.
Oh no! So that's the whole lithium-ion thermal runaway.
I've had two fires at home, and I now charge batteries outside. And
yikes!
It's the lithium polymer batteries actually become flamethrowers, and so it's quite. you have to take them seriously.
I think we've all seen the YouTube videos of electric cars on fire, fire department absolutely challenged to put them out, and God forbid, you know, lithium fire on board an airline.
Absolutely. Well, you're not even allowed to ship the LiPo batteries by air. All LiPo batteries have to be shipped by ground from the source.
Wow. Big problem. So how did you, and I don't mean to take this, you know, in jest, but you're charging your LiPo batteries on the workbench. They start to smoke, and you just kind of grabbed them and ran out the house?
No, it was scarier than that. It happened at around midnight. Our son heard smoke alarms go off in the basement. We have 22 smoke alarms in our house, and 13 of them went off. When I ran down to the basement, I knew it had to be the LiPo batteries I was charging for an event the next morning. And I saw the flames. They were about 3 feet high.
Yikes.
Carpet burning. And so what I did was I run an emergency business, and I think logically through all of this stuff, and I'll tell you, you can't think straight when this happens. So what I do have is fire extinguishers all over the house. Punch the fire extinguisher, put out the fire in about 10 seconds. Right then and there, the fire department came. They were there in 5 minutes, and they took it very seriously. They vented the house, and it was about $5,000 damage.
Yikes. And did you actually take the battery packs outside?
Yeah, I threw them out. So when the fire went out, I just grabbed what they were on and then threw them out.
So they actually hadn't gone into thermal runaway?
They were gone. They were totally fried.
Thermal runaway is one cell lighting off the next cell, lighting off the next cell. And they get up to about 1650 C. And it's not something you're picking up, nor is it something that an ABC fire extinguisher is putting out.
The lesson is, don't charge batteries on top of a box of papers.
AKA fuel source.
Everything was fine. We did the cleaning ourselves. An insurance claim would have been around $5,000.
Well, thank God, you know, your son was on it. As you said, not, you know, just over half of the fire of the smoke alarms went off, although 22 in your house. Yikes.
Well,
you're not a sales guy for the smoke detector company, are you?
But I can assure you that the lesson was not lost on the newbie, being me, that this is not something you mess around with. You take, as we've discussed many times, we take safety at our club very, very seriously. This is just another aspect of making safety such a high priority.
You know, the research I've done, because obviously having a lithium ion thermal runaway in a small general aviation aircraft of 5,000 feet is a problem. Have you guys ever thought about fire containment bags to remediate thermal runaway?
One of the things that we use is they're called LiPo bags. They're lithium polymer bags. We transport the batteries in those bags. Some people will charge the batteries while they're in the bag. So the charger is situated outside the bag, the batteries are inside, and we'll charge the batteries that way. So it's a special fireproof bag that we use.
Awesome.
And then when I take them to the field, I have four ammunition boxes, just surplus ammunition boxes.
With or without ammunition?
Without ammunition, the battery is the ammunition. So I use that to carry it to the field and storing it in the house and charging. So that was after the first fire, after the second fire, which was contained because I now only charge when I'm in the room. I now charge outside.
Causes the fires?
Don't know, and the evidence goes up in smoke. So it's got to be a short inside. It's a battery that's been charged many times before, and it decides it wants to go.
So on a brighter note, Frank, what's your most favorite airplane, model airplane to fly?
It has to be the P-51. I have at least four of them, and I found plans for another one just last week, and it's so going to be built. It's small. So I have two 40 size, which are about 50-inch wingspan, weigh about 6 pounds.
Wow.
And I have a smaller one, and then this one would be 34-inch wingspan. I am known in our club as the guy who flies small airplanes. So just to counter that, I'm building a 12-foot wingspan power glider now.
Frank is a man of extremes.
I was going to say, you'll be able to see that like without binoculars 500 feet up. Mark, what's your favorite airplane to fly?
Probably whichever one I last landed without an incident. That one is always my favorite plane. But you know what? I have to say that I've enjoyed every plane I've tried. I've tried Warbirds, different types of tail draggers. There's all sorts of different planes, jets. You can fly 3D, Acrobats. So there's really many different types of planes to try. And I've spent my first 5 years in the hobby trying to figure out what kind of flying I want to do. And I found that I want to do just about all of it. So I've had a couple of Warbirds, P-51, Spitfire, just something called the Timber. There's all sorts of different planes and they're all fun to fly.
And you're also a builder. Mark, what's your most favorite kit to put together?
So I typically buy kits, but Frank is leading me down a cliff, so to speak, on a latest build. So I bought a kit and he's helping me build it, but he enjoyed the idea of this particular model. It's called a Scimitar from a builder from the 70s by the name of Bill Evans that you can't find anymore, but I did find a kit and Frank is building one as well. So we're in the process of building that and that should be a lot of fun. It's a plane that does not have a horizontal stabilizer.
Wow.
Which should be pretty fun to watch flying.
So, Frank, what's your most favorite RC model airplane?
Beside the P-51, I do have two Spitfires, and I have probably 50 RC airplanes.
50? 50?
Yeah. So when we had a problem and the electrician had to come in while I was out of the house, my wife had to empty the my hangar that's in front of part of it is in front of it. And she said at the end of the day, do you know you have 42 airplanes? All I said was my objective was to be able to crash one a week for an entire year.
She didn't say, Frank, are you a recovering model airplane junkie?
There's a fine line between a collector and a hoarder. So.
42 ready-to-go model airplanes. How many kits?
Probably only about 10 of them. Most of them are scratch-built or own design.
You don't have a problem. If you only have 10, what are you talking? So I guess you've seen a lot of change and a lot of folks coming in to the hobby. I understand at TMAC, you know, we've got 100 members and we got a waiting list to join the club. Why a waiting list?
Well, there's a couple of reasons. First of all, unfortunately, one of the clubs in the GTA lost the field that they were flying out of. So we picked up a number of those members who joined our club. And there's always new people looking to get into the hobby. It's a very exciting hobby. We see people come to the field. They just happen to be driving by. They see the planes in the air and they drop by and they also get hooked. A lot of times younger people, you know, 10, 12, 13, 14 years old, planes are a natural source of inquiry for them. It's exciting. So they join because of that. So the problem is that at our club, as in most clubs, there's a maximum number of airplanes that can be allowed in the air at any one time. Our club is 5. So what we don't want to have happen is a situation where people are waiting half an hour, 45 minutes just to take a 3 or a 5 minute flight. As people drop out, we can accommodate new new members, but we also encourage young people. We're very, very much in favor of younger people joining the hobby. So we really do our best to encourage them to join, take up the hobby, and become, you know, strong advocates for our hobby as well.
But it's kind of an interesting problem. While we want to have younger kids come in, right now you're saying no to the 10-year-old that shows up with their father. As you said, not until someone drops out. Or
in the past, we would accommodate those younger people, even as young as 10 and 11 years old. We could accommodate them. Unfortunately, because of the recent changes brought down by Transport Canada, it's made it much more difficult for younger people to get into the hobby. The limitations are not really of our choosing. It's more trying to stay in line with what Transport Canada has mandated, and being realistic about the amount of effort that's required by our trainers. We're all volunteers, so nobody gets paid to help students learn how to fly. So we have to respect that as well, that they can't spend, you know, hundreds of hours with each individual student. So we will give preference to a new student if they're younger, rather than an older student, not because they're easier to train, but just because we want younger people in the hobby.
Frank, you alluded to how difficult it is to actually learn to fly a model airplane, a lot harder, I think, than learning to drive a car. Typically, how long does it take from someone who shows up with 0 hours to someone who can then fly by themselves?
It's generally 12 to 15 flights is my experience. Younger kids take less time, especially if they've done RC cars because of driving orientation. Some kids will solo on their fifth flight. I soloed on my eighth, but that was just because I was so determined that I was going to do it properly. I had one person say, after 2 years of training, aren't you going to give up on me? And I said, you're not going to be my first failure. Every student I've taught, and I've probably taught at least 250 students, you can tell when they're flying, when there's that eureka moment where they're no longer chasing the airplane in the sky, they're actually placing it in the sky, and they don't realize it. And I told every single one, they bring the plane down, and I go, what did you notice about that flight? No idea. Came down safely. No. You put the airplane in the sky where you wanted it. And they go, oh, yeah, I didn't realize that.
And folks, Frank is T-MAC's chief flying instructor. So you alluded to something a little earlier, Mark, Transport Canada. And I think that's a nod to the loss of the Model Aeronautics Association of Canada's exemption to the Transport Canada's Section 9 of the CARS, bringing radio control model airplanes in scope to the regulator, requiring folks flying model airplanes as well as drones that weigh more than 254 grams.
250, correct, yes.
That now are in scope to the CARS, and you have to essentially have an R-Pass, at minimum, an R-Pass basic license.
Correct.
I know all three of us around this table have our pass licenses. So wondering, how has that whole change from being a hobby with really only MAC regulating with safety rules and so on and so forth, to coming in scope to like the federal government?
That's a good question. There's probably a lot of people who would like to talk about the politics of it, but the reality is how it affects people just getting into the hobby. When they came to us while we still had the exemption, in other words, not requiring the RPAS certificate, they could learn how to fly as they came to the field. Now we have to have them get their RPAS certificate before they even come to the field to take their first flight. And that can be a bit of a daunting task. The questions on the RPAS exam are more geared towards a more traditional type pilot, I would call a real pilot like yourself, Phil. So when someone comes to the field and they ask, well, what's the process of getting involved in the hobby? Now we have to say, well, before you do anything, you have to get this RPAS certificate. It's a 35 question exam. It's not that difficult to pass. You have to be calm and take your time in doing it, but it can be a little bit daunting to someone who's just getting started. For people who've been in the hobby for a long time, it's not something that we would have chosen to do, but it's not as arduous. Thank you. As someone new to the hobby would find it. So it adds a layer of complexity that didn't exist prior to the loss of the exemption.
Franks, what's your thought?
My thought's a little bit split, because to the new enthusiast, they have nothing to compare it to, so it's the cost of entry. This is what we do, and this is what we have to do, and if you accept that, come and fly with us. So they have nothing to compare to the freedom they had before. The issue is with us older guys who have been flying for 10, 15 years, who think that people have taken away freedom that we used to have. And the way I look at it is, what it's adding is safety and discipline, which is our main mission anyways. So it's transitional. But for the newbies coming into the hobby, they won't see a change because they have nothing to compare it to.
I completely get it. And Mark, to your earlier point, I think we're all pilots. We're just flying different things, platforms.
I would agree with that. Just to the point of the new person getting in, it's just the thought of having to take a written test to get into the hobby, I think, is the thing that people are finding disconcerting. It's not whether they can or they cannot. It's just the fact that they have to do it before they even take a single flight that they find a little bit difficult to swallow.
And just for those folks that, you know, our international audience, where we don't have this requirement with the FAA as an example, there's a open book test that has to be written. And as Mark said, there's a lot of non-model airplane questions in it. But with a little studying and getting help from your buddies, it's not
there are a lot arduous. There's a lot of good resources on the web. As you point out, it's open book. You have multiple web browsers open. It's perfectly acceptable to do that. There's nothing wrong with doing that. And that's why I said taking the actual test is not that big a deal. It's just the thought of taking the test that is causing newcomers to the hobby a little bit of grief.
And then you've got other resources. Don Drones on YouTube, who's got a bunch of YouTube videos. So it seems that this hobby for a very long time, bigger is better. Giant scale model aircraft, the Joel Knoll rally that's taking place in May, the giant scale event hosted by the Kingston Radio Control Modelers in August. How does that trend impact TMAC?
I don't think it's that's an interesting question. I don't think it's really impacting us in any great way. A typical non-glider plane at our club is, you know, less than 1.7 meter wingspan in length. We don't see very much bigger than that, other than gliders. So it has. I don't think that's really affecting us at all.
So you're not thinking that Frank's going to show up with his 1/3 scale electric P-51 Mustang retracts, full retractable landing gear, rockets, like the whole deal, sliding cockpit canopy?
No, but what has happened is, because we have so much power available now for the weight, versus the weight we used to carry, we have so much spare power that you can do stuff that shouldn't be possible, and you can yank yourself out of it on a sheer power basis. A given example is we ran an event at the field last August, and I invited one of the guys on the Canadian team. He came with an OV-10 Bronco that a baby could sit in. It had enough power to battery power to power a city. And it did vertical stuff. It did inverted flight. It did loops. And it was probably 12-foot wingspan.
I would say that, yeah.
And it came up to my waist.
So huge.
It's huge. And he flew off our field, which is not a big field. But he could get away with it because full control, full ability, and to be able to power out of a situation that he preferred not to be in.
To say that a slightly different way, the tech in the hands of a proficient pilot allows bigger airplanes out of smaller fields. So folks, what's on the horizon for you two guys and TMAC and model airplanes in general?
Hopefully more of the same. We always look forward to spring. I'm not a winter flyer, but we start instruction in May because of then we'll have enough sunlight to be able to do it at the end of the day. But it's always, we're always looking forward to it. And the only crazy thing we do every year is I have flown every New Year's Day at 10 o'clock since 1989. That's never been broken.
You get the Frozen Finger Award.
Absolutely. We've had days that have been absolutely beautiful. There have been other days where I took a half a circuit flight and landed, and the only guy flying, and it was just too cold.
Thank God for those battery-powered socks.
Well, he's got the extra battery to power those socks.
And Mark, what's on the horizon for you?
Like Frank, it's pretty much more of the same. I enjoy flying similar planes to what other people at the field are flying, but I also like to fly things that are a little bit different, hence the Scimitar that we're now building is going to be very unique. So I enjoy building Balsa kits. I also enjoy flying the foamies. They're relatively inexpensive, they're easy to repair, and they're readily available and relatively easy to fly. So just continuing on in the same vein that I've enjoyed so far.
Well, thank you, guys, for being part of the Plane Talk Cockpit.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Plane Talk. If you have any ideas for a future Plane Talk episode, please go to the Contact Us page at planetalk.ca and send in your idea. Don't forget to like us at planetalk.ca, our Facebook and LinkedIn pages, and this podcast. And never stop living the dream.